Oregon led the country in the adoption of a death with dignity law. For more than 20 years now, people facing terminal illness have had the option of ending their lives before the suffering gets too bad, with a lot of strings attached. But ending life is just the main option. There are all kinds of other choices that can be made on the way to the end of life, and that explains the presence of the organization End of Life Choices Oregon. It helps guide people through the many choices. Sue Porter is the founding executive director. She lives in Portland and is visiting Ashland and is in our studio. Good to see you here, Sue.
Very nice to be here.
So what was the idea that led to the creation of End of Life Choices Oregon?
There was a group of us who had worked for Compassion and Choices for many years, and Compassion and Choices is a great organization, and their emphasis is policy, politics, successfully passing the law in other states, and we wanted an organization that emphasized more what we call client care. Taking care of people in their homes, on the street, who actually need help going through the law. So we formed our own organization, and that is our mission. It's strictly helping people through the death with dignity law.
It is not like you just decide today you're going to exercise your rights under the Death with Dignity Law and get to use them tomorrow. I mentioned the strings attached just in introducing this segment. How dizzying an array of choices is it, Sue?
Well, first of all, I always like to say this is not about a magic pill under an enchanted bush. It's much more complicated. When we meet with people, we explain the law, we explain the process. Just to qualify for the law, you have to have two doctors agree that you are terminally ill. And by terminal, what they are saying is that your prognosis is 6 months or less to die. That's not an exacting science, but they do their best. And I like to make the distinction between terminal and fatal. If someone today gets a diagnosis of a cancer of which they will die, they might have 2 years, they might have 3 years, but until it becomes terminal, they don't qualify for the law.
So it really is that specific that a doctor or more than one has to say, you're going to die within 6 months.
Two
doctors have to say that. Yeah. Okay.
One is a prescribing doctor who would write the prescription, and the other one is the consulting doctor who has to also see the patient and agree with the prognosis.
We've essentially gone through a generation then of people who have grown up with Death with Dignity Law in Oregon. So, I mean, is there much of any issue any longer with the medical community, if there ever was? I mean, when we talk about the prescribing doctor, I just wonder, there might have been some 20 years ago who had some reluctance to do this, but is it pretty much ingrained in Oregon life that this is here now?
We have many, many more doctors who will partake, but the majority of them still do not.
Really?
Right.
So you have to shop around a little bit, it sounds like, to get the doctor to do the end-of-life prescription?
Well, we get many people whose doctors will not partake, and we help them if we can. We cannot make any promises as far as finding doctors, but we can try and do our best.
All right. So you have some resources at your disposal, doctors among them. What other sorts of things do you bring to provide as choices to the people who seek out your help?
Well, what we do mostly is we have five teams throughout Oregon, and a totaling between about 50 and 55 volunteers. And a volunteer is assigned to the person, and we call them clients because we want to make a strict distinction that we are not medical people.
So they're not called patients, for example. They're,
we do not call them patients. Mm-hmm. And we meet with them and their family or whoever their caretakers are. We explain the law. It is a process which takes a minimum by law of 15 days, but normally the reality is it takes about a month to get through it. And it's about meeting with both doctors, putting in two oral requests, a written request. The timing is prescribed on how this has to be done. both doctors sing the client. Also, they have to verify that the person is of sound mental capacity to make this decision, and also that they have the physical capacity in order to swallow, take the medication and swallow.
And they have to administer it themselves. They don't have to swallow. They essentially have to pick it up and get it to their mouths, right?
Yes. This is about autonomy and self-determination. They have to, if anyone else were to make, they have to take it themselves so that it's not euthanasia. Nobody can make them die. Euthanasia is against the law throughout the United States. If they have a motor neuron disease, such as ALS, they can press a feeding tube down instead of swallowing. But again, they have to do it themselves.
All right. So there's no administering for any other person. And then that should be completely understood, that nobody else is going to lift the cup to the lips of the dying person but the dying person themselves.
Exactly. They have to do it themselves. They can do it through a straw. But they have to do it themselves.
They have to get themselves. We're talking about the Death with Dignity law in Oregon and about how end-of-life choices Oregon assists people in accessing the law and deciding what they want to do. Sue Porter is the founding executive director. She's in the studio with me here, and you can join the conversation on the exchange. Your questions and comments are welcome by phone at 800-838-3760, 838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So, you mentioned the timeline, a minimum of 15 days, but, you know, it's, I know from experience how hard it is to try to get a doctor's appointment, so it sounds like this can potentially go on for months. I mean, are there people who die while waiting for the ability to exercise their rights under the Death with Dignity law?
Oh, absolutely. We have people who come to us too late. So, if someone is going to pursue this, we hope they don't come to us too late. But certainly there are people who die while they are pursuing it. And I want to be clear that we don't make up this 15 days. This is prescribed by law.
Sure. Understood. So you know, given the set of circumstances, I mean, nobody wants to die, I assume in most cases. But here's where they're faced with, like, I die in a way I don't want versus I die at a time of my own choosing. So, I mean, but what generally is the frame of mind that you find people in when they contact you?
They are, most people, and I'm going to delineate this a bit by age, but especially if they're elderly, their attitude by the time they meet us is, I was going to die of something anyway. People a little bit on the younger side are more frustrated and a bit angry. But according to the statistics, the three most prevalent reasons that people choose death with dignity is due to lack of dignity, lack of control, and inability to pursue life's pleasures anymore. And they are so frustrated. They're bound to their bed. They may have lost bodily functions. They're on so much medication that they're not remembering things, you know, until they wake up. They've just lost all quality of life.
And so to decide that it's easier to, or better to go the way they choose, when they choose.
Yes, and sometimes we hear, well, I saw my neighbor go through this, or my cousin went through this. I do not want to put myself through this or my family through this any longer.
You mentioned the frustration from younger people, and I wonder if you keep track of what the average age of your clients is in End-of-Life Choices Oregon.
The median age is 71 to 72, okay, according to the state statistics.
All right.
So when I say younger, I mean people who are maybe in their 50s. We don't get that many of them.
Mm-hmm.
We've had occasionally someone who's in their 40s, 30s, but that's rare.
Right. And then there were, of course, the case of the California woman in her late 20s who moved to Oregon so she could use the Death with Dignity law here.
Mm-hmm.
California now has its own law, although it's been tied up in a lot of court action over the
Actually, it is legal now.
It is
also. It was only tied up for a short while.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So just in terms of assisting people with knowing what their choices are, I mean, that's your name, End of Life Choices Oregon. Even so, it must be a process that takes some skill. I mean, not only to talk frankly about the subject matter, but to have the light touch to help people find their way without anybody feeling like you're pushing them.
Absolutely. And we screen the volunteers, and they go through training. Besides a two-day intense training, they also follow us, volunteers who have been doing this. I've been doing it for 19 years, but we don't assign anyone anything on their own until we are certain that they are ready for it. It takes a certain amount of sensitivity, certain amount of skill, et cetera. And as far as the autonomy goes, when someone is going to die, we make certain that it is their decision at that moment, not only at the time that they're going through the process of getting the medication, because most people, once they can have the medication, wait a while before they take it. But we make certain that at the time that they're taking the medication, we ask them three questions, and that is, what is this medication going to do? Whose decision is this? And
there's the third one we're stuck on for the moment.
I'm stuck on the third one, which I've done for years and years. Whose decision is this? What's this medication going to do? And sorry.
We'll come back around to that. Okay. It's one of those things that'll come to you in about 5 minutes, I bet, yeah, that kind of thing. But so the point is, though, that this is you're there to be, I don't know, training wheels, I guess, for lack of a better term. You have the other one?
Okay. Yeah. You have the right to change your mind. Mm-hmm. You have the right to change your mind. What's the medication going to do, and whose decision is this?
And so I've seen the figures not recently, perhaps, but that there are a fair number of people who do get the prescription filled, but don't end up using it.
Yeah, I really would like to address that because it's very, very misunderstood. Each year there are about 65 to 75% of the people take it. But that remaining number, between 25 and 35%, does not mean that the person necessarily chose not to take it. That number means that the person could have died of their disease, that they're still alive, that they became ineligible because they lost mental or physical capacity, or that they did die, but the state does not know whether they took the medication or not. So it's four distinct categories, that 25 to 35%.
We are talking about End of Life Choices Oregon. That is the name of the group, with its founding executive director, Sue Porter, who joins us in the studio in Ashland, and we're talking about the use of Oregon's Death with Dignity Law and the various choices along the way. There are many, as you're hearing. You can join the conversation on the exchange with your questions about it, and you might have an experience with someone you know who has used Oregon's Death with Dignity Law. We'd like to hear that story if you're willing to share it. Give us a call at 800-838-3760 on the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So it does sound, you mentioned, if people come to you late, they're going to be somewhat frustrated, but there are, you know, the window will be open for a short time and then close. I mean, you have to have the 6 months prognosis for death within that time, have to be physically able to take the drugs yourself, make all these decisions, et cetera. So it's a pretty easy window to miss, I would think.
It is. If people come to us too late and we know we're not going to get them through the legal process, we do suggest VSED, which is voluntarily stop eating and drinking. We cannot monitor that, but we can give them information about it.
I noticed that, the VSED. Okay, so this is not that they take a medication, but they stop eating and drinking. So is there a particular way to do this?
Well, sometimes they get help from hospice. From what we understand is, after a few days of not eating and drinking, it becomes easier. They tend to maybe fall asleep, but the idea is not to have food around, and certainly nothing liquid.
I recall, and I hope I got this right, Diane Rehm, who used to be on the show preceding ours, she and her husband lived in the District of Columbia and didn't have the option. And he was very sick with ALS and ultimately chose to go this way because he didn't have death with dignity law available to him. So if you decide, I mean, this is not just an Oregon thing. It sounds like if you voluntarily stop eating and drinking, you could do this pretty much any place.
Oh, right. I mean, anyone can refuse any kind of treatment, that, no matter where you live. And if you consider eating and drinking as a type of treatment to keep you alive, you can refuse that.
Mm-hmm. So I know in talking to medical pros about signs of the end of life as it occurs naturally, that people will generally stop eating and drinking at that point. But this is a real intentional thing you're talking about here.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so is there any paperwork that goes with that? Anything let me just ask more generally, in any situation that you encounter a client with, are there things that you need them to sign that is just for your own purposes at End of Life Choices Oregon?
Oh, we chart everything. Mm-hmm. We chart every phone call. We chart every visit. We chart conversations with family members. Everything gets very, very particularly written, and we have access to all files.
So do the volunteers, I mean, are they there for the whole thing, or is it just what they are requested to be there for? I mean, it sounds like you have learned the skill at End of Life Choices Oregon for doing what's needed and not doing what isn't requested.
That's exactly what we do. people definitely want our help to steward them through the law. They always have choice. All we do is explain. I want to make perfectly clear that we do not sell a service. When it comes time for them to take the medication, they have the choice of having us there or not. I will say that the vast majority, I'm going to say 90 to 95% of the families do want us there, but we always give them the choice. And when we are there, we're there to help them. We're not there to intrude. I actually like to describe our service at the time of death as being in the background, like caterers. We want to make sure that everything is going well, that we answer everyone's questions, that the process is legal. We prepare the medication. We give it to the person, hand it to the person. They have to self-administer it. And then we leave the room so that the family can have the last moments together.
You mentioned this is not a magic pill under a bush. It's actually quite a few pills, isn't it? And so preparing the medication sounds like it's a bit of a slurry.
There are two medications, and I would like to say it's not both. Mm-hmm. The one that we've been using in Oregon for 21 years is 10 grams of Seconal. There's an alternative because that one has gotten so expensive. It's up to $3,200, $3,400. And so there's an alternative one now that is a compound medication. We call that DDMP because of the medications that are mixed. And that one is about $600. But the Seconal one, we open 100 pills and put them in powder form. In each case, it's about 3 to 4 ounces of liquid that's added to it that the person must drink.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. That sounds like a bit of stuff to force down, in essence. I mean, it's just I know you're by the point you're taking this in, you want to do this. I get that. But still, it sounds like it's not a pleasant experience, that part of it.
Well, what's interesting about it is by the time someone has decided they want to do this, more than anything, we have to slow them down. They have about 90 to 120 seconds to take it, and we want to keep them from gulping it down. And they can follow it with anything they want to drink afterwards, anything to take that bitter taste out.
How do your volunteers deal with this? I mean, I imagine it's a set of mixed feelings. I mean, you have given somebody something they want. You have given them what they feel is a death that has dignity to it versus what they would have had otherwise. But still, they're watching people they've come to know die.
Yeah, we really have to compartmentalize it in our hearts and our minds and our intellect. So we have to really stay on task as to what our role is there and handle it accordingly as professionals. Now, we all have each other to debrief with afterwards. Our five teams are outstanding, made up of outstanding people. So we can call on anyone to help us if there's some kind of emotional follow-through that needs to be addressed.
You mentioned you're not selling a service, so is there any charge for the service?
There's no charge for our service. We're a nonprofit organization, and so we survive all by donations.
All right. You know, I meant to ask, too, about the money. You mentioned how much the medications cost for ending your life, and I can't imagine that's covered by medical insurance.
Oh, no. There's very few insurance companies that'll cover it, and most of our people are on Medicare. And Medicare does not cover it. Medicaid does cover the compound medication, DDMP.
Were the costs raised because the pharmaceutical companies didn't want people using their medications like this?
Oh, no, I think it's called Big Pharma.
Uh-huh.
I think it's for profit.
It's just a matter of them making money.
Uh-huh. It's just profit, yeah. Uh-huh. Also, we go through times when the Seconal is not available. Mm-hmm. And but when I started this, that same medication was $130.
Wow, and up to $3,200
now? Oh, sometimes $3,400, wow. Sometimes a little less. But, and we cannot quote prices. We just tell them generally what we think it's going to be. But
right.
We don't know if the next morning we're going to wake up and it's higher.
Okay, just in these few details, we've learned that it is difficult indeed to make use of Oregon's Death with Dignity law, and that's why End of Life Choices Oregon is there. Sue Porter is the executive director, lives in Portland, and is visiting Ashland today. Thanks so much for coming by the studio.
Oh, my honor, my pleasure.